This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from Master Dogen's fascicle and Refrain from Unwholesome Action. Bai Jui of the Tang Dynasty was a lay student of Ruman and a Dharma descendant of Master Matsu. When he was governor of the Hang province, he studied with Zen Master Daolin. One day, Jui said, "What is the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma?" Daolin said, "Refrain from unwholesome action. Do wholesome action." Jui said, "If that's so, a three-year-old child could say this." Daolin said, "A three-year-old child could say this, but even an 80-year-old person cannot practice it." Jui bowed in gratitude and left. So as we are in our twilight hours of this Ango and this session, I thought it would be nice to end my final words, the Ango. So make room for somebody else to have some words tomorrow. With this conclusion to this fascicle, and let Dogen speak a bit about this teaching. I was thinking as I was looking at my notes after lunch about this fascicle, and you know, there are musical forms of composition in which the beginning is an exposition in which the themes are introduced, melodies usually, and then they go through a process, and so they're introduced and sort of you get to know them a little bit so that you can recognize them. And then they go on a journey, usually multiple journeys. And in those on those journeys, they go through all kinds of changes. They encounter all kinds of tensions. And through the process of those journeys are transformed. They are turned upside down and inside out, and sometimes they're hard to even recognize. But they always have their essential theme, their essential germ or seed. And at the very end, they return, the recapitulation. And in that returning, they're often as they were in the beginning, but they're not the same. Something has changed. And so oftentimes they return in a very simple form, but they're not something, they've undergone a kind of transformation, and it's as though they'll never be the same. And so I was thinking of refrain from unwholesome action and do wholesome action in that way, in this fascicle, because Dogen takes them, introduces them, and makes it clear from the beginning that when we first encounter these teachings, we hear them in a certain way that isn't wrong, but is not all they are. And then he basically allows us to see all else that they are, sort of takes them through or reveals their various transformations. And at the end, he brings them back again in this very beautiful, simple little story where the hero is a three-year-old child. And what better way to bring home this essential teaching? And so this question of what is the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma? Refrain from unwholesome action, do wholesome action. The essential meaning. So what is the heart? If you had to say, what does all of this really come down to? 2,500 years, innumerable teachings, lineages, practices. What does it all come down to? Somebody asked during Sesshin, brought up the question of what is spiritual practice? You know, what does it mean, really? What does spiritual practice mean? Or religious practice, what does that mean? We can speak of ourselves in terms of having physicality, emotions, intellect, a psychology, a spirituality. The Buddha spoke of the Eightfold Path. We have the Eight Gates. There are various teachings that lay out stages of meditation, of practice, of the Bodhisattva path. And all of these are aspects of what is one undivided whole, one complete whole. The Buddhism itself expresses as cease from harm and do all that is good and study the mind. And that's really the essential. It's like the linchpin to go beyond or into, to liberate what we perceive as and what we call the ordinary, to realize the true. And so there are innumerable ways of speaking about it, to not get lost in hatred or in love, to not get lost, to not take up as a strategy avoidance, denial, oppression, suppression, but don't take up as a strategy to try and be immortal by preserving. And because those are our essential strategies, when we don't go down those paths, we discover something else. The middle way, the essential meaning, reveals itself. We are standing on that very ground. Master Dogen, again, Joe Cohen, says, when we realize this place, our daily life is a realization of this ultimate reality, this essential meaning. When we realize this way, our daily life is the realization of this essential meaning. And so, if we practice and realize the Buddha way, when we gain one Dharma, when we study, examine, and realize one Dharma, we complete that Dharma. When we encounter one action, we practice one action. And that could really be it's like when you're setting off on the journey, what are the final words? When you encounter one action, practice that action. It's kind of a basic principle of practice. And it's really just a good thing to do in life. Most things that Buddhism teaches are good things to do in life. When we encounter one action, we practice that action. Because if we don't do that, then we're avoiding it. We're skirting it. We're putting it off, delaying it. And that never works out very well. So we continually are meeting the ground that rises up as we take our step. And so to realize that ground, to realize the mind source from which everything arises. And so although we can speak of the physical, emotional, intellectual, psychological, spiritual, and all of those are Buddha Dharma, all of those are body and mind study of the way, the Buddha Dharma is not any one aspect of those. In other words, it can't be reduced to one thing. And yet in one thing, it contains everything. What is the essential meaning? What is the essential heart? To cease from harm, do good. And so a 3-year-old could say this. In other words, anyone who could speak could say this. And a child could understand those words. But why is it so difficult to do? Right? That's really the essential question, not just of Buddhism, but of every religious faith, every spiritual practice. Why is it so hard to do? Why is it so hard to be human? As my mother used to say, it ain't easy being human. Well, having sat all session, how would you answer? Whatever our answer, whatever insight we might have into that, saying is not doing. And although we know that on some level, hopefully that's on a basic level what drew us into Buddhist practice, it takes a long, long time to really, I think, have full faith in the reality of that, in the truth of that. Dogen said Jui was a beginner and a latecomer to the Buddha way. It seems he had never dreamed of the true meaning of refrain from unwholesome action and do wholesome action. He thought that Daolin presented this phrase in an intellectual way. Jui hadn't heard and did not know that refrain from unwholesome action and do wholesome action are teachings of the Buddha way, which are thousands and myriads of years old. They're ancient, essential truths. He responded in the way he did because he was not standing in the Buddha Dharma and did not understand the Buddha Dharma. In a sense, that's the danger of the precepts of all teachings, is because they point to the truth, arise from the mind ground, they have power. And that's not a small thing. That's not something to underestimate, particularly in our culture in which information and teachings are like passed around like chips at a party. That these teachings have enormous power, which means an enormous power to liberate us. They also can hurt us, or we can hurt ourselves if we don't understand it. I mean, since the time of the Buddha, the example of picking up a snake wrongly, if you don't know how to pick up a snake, it'll bite you. And so if we don't know how to pick up the teachings, we may get bit. We don't see them that way. They're just words on a page. Or we think because they're teachings, they're inherently good, which means every encounter that every person has, no matter what, will be good. And that's not true. Because the teachings' power is actualized when the teachings mingle with you, with your mind, with your body, through practice. And so when we see them in merely an intellectual way, that's when they have the power, one of the ways in which they have the power to do harm. And when we do that, invariably we are defining them, describing them, understanding them on the basis of what we already know. In other words, we're just trying to fit them into certain slots that we already have. As Dogen says, we're not just standing in the Buddha Dharma, which means we have to step forward. We have to step forward. We actually have to bend. You know, dukkha is we want everything else to bend. You know, I'm just going to sit here and be unhappy. Right? But it's all going to work out in the end because I have the power to bend all of this so that as it encounters this, it encounters this in such a way that it makes me happy. Right? That clearly doesn't work out. We have to bend. That's a big part of training. Is that for everyone who comes into training, we encounter in similar and different ways things that don't bend, that are not don't yield to our desires, don't yield to our beliefs, don't conform to what we want or what we think should be. And until someone bends, there's going to be trouble, dis-ease. And so in that, we are stepping forward to stand in the Buddha Dharma. The Buddha Dharma is everywhere in everything. It's never hidden. It never holds back. And yet it appears to have a gate that will not open until we begin to merge. Our mind mingles in intimate contact with that Dharma, this Dharma. And so when Dogen says that Jui is came to the Dharma late and as a beginner, he's never dreamed of the true meaning, he's not standing in the Buddha Dharma, this is not a criticism. He's just stating where Jui is, that's all. So we shouldn't think that where he is wrong or insufficient. He stands where he is. He asks an honest question. He expresses his understanding from the place where he stands. You and I stand where we are. That's always how it is. And we may not yet be standing in the Buddha Dharma, but we're not standing apart from it either. In fact, not yet understanding is not separate from the path. Otherwise, we could never encounter it. If we couldn't encounter the path until we understood the path, then we'd never encounter it. And when I was working on this a couple of days ago, I wrote, we should be at peace with this. And after lunch, as I was reflecting, I thought, hang on. Should we be at peace with this? Careful. We should not be in conflict, but peace. When it's true peace, but when it's not true, then it can be complacency. It can be a kind of acceptance of where I am standing here that does not move me forward. Dogen says, refrain from unwholesome action and do wholesome action. These are teachings of the Buddha way, thousands and myriads of years old, ancient teachings. You know, I don't know what that means to you, to anybody these days, particularly in the West, particularly in the U.S. perhaps. You know, where ancient ways, you know, what good are they? You know, we're interested in like today's glitter. Ancient ways. Unless we're all fools and all of our ancestors are fools, they're here now because they have power. They had power then, they have power now. Dogen says, in the beginning, we're here, refrain from, as it appears. We hear it intellectually. Don't cause harm. Okay. I understand what that means. I understand what that means from where I'm standing. And so I can practice on that basis. It's not yet standing fully within the Buddha Dharma, but I can do that. And because it's true, it's not false. We can begin there. We practice this. And in that way, because it's true, we will step forward along the path. And because we're stepping forward along the path, we'll begin to see what hasn't been seen. We'll hear what hasn't been heard. Reveal what has been hidden. And we'll see that refrain from unwholesome action or refrain from harm includes not causing harm. But the ceasing from harm isn't just about not causing harm. Dogen in the Kyojikaiman speaks of it as the abiding place of all Buddhas, the source of all Buddhas, the ocean of wisdom from which all Buddhas, all things, the whole phenomenal universe arises. And then he says, even if you caution against doing unwholesome action through a discriminating consciousness, and encourage doing wholesome action through discrimination, you still actualize, refrain from. You still actualize this abiding place. So what is he saying? So even from within our discriminating consciousness, right and wrong, good and bad, success and failure, self and other. And so from that place, from where we all live, even if we caution against doing harm and encourage doing good, even though we're doing that from within discriminating consciousness, not fully standing within the Buddha Dharma, he says we actualize refrain from. We actualize ceasing. We actualize the abiding place of all Buddhas. And because of that, we can speak of a Buddha action, an action that is the manifestation of Prajnaparamita. And we can also call that same action deluded. And because we think so much in terms of good and bad, a Buddha action must be good, a deluded action must be bad. That's what it is. But that's not what it is. They are not in conflict. Though the deluded action may create harm and conflict, but it's because of that that we can practice from within delusion the true Dharma. I mean, think about it. If things were inherently the way we think of them, you know, we tend to think in absolute. So delusion is an absolute bad. A Buddha action is an absolute good. So if we're deluded and we're practicing, how could we ever step forward? How could we ever develop? How could we ever realize if where we are is inherently and through its own existence bad, we would just be that. And there wouldn't be a whole lot we could do about it. This is why we can practice the true Dharma without a clear understanding, without a complete understanding, and experience the effects of that unfolding. It's why we have the capacity to practice virtues from within the three poisons. You know, I was saying the other day that our mind, the way our mind gravitates towards negativity, and so when we're struggling on the cushion, you know, our mind is active, or we're hurting, or we're facing something painful, or we have a lot of self-doubt. That which we perceive as negative tends to fill our consciousness. It's all bad. It's all doubt. It's all struggle. And when it's all bad, it's not long before I'm all bad, if there's any gap at all, in fact. But in those very moments, and this is part of the commitment to practice, right? In those moments, we hold ourselves freely. We give ourselves generously, sometimes without knowing it, because it doesn't feel generous. But we give ourselves generously to holding that place, standing in the Buddha Dharma, right? As we practice that which we perceive as negative or difficult or an obstacle or delusion. And what's happening? Patience, perseverance, faith in yourself, beginner's mind, forbearance, generosity, courage. It's interesting, you know, how our minds work and why we so more readily see what we perceive as negative. I don't know, maybe was that supposed to keep us out of harm's way? And so thus we can practice from within the conditioned mind without being at odds with the unconditioned mind. Because being at odds with the unconditioned mind is only the view of the conditioned mind. It isn't the reality. And in that way, every moment, when one practice arises, when one action arises and we practice that action, that's stepping forward. That's moving closer. And what's difficult, you know, if there was like a meter or a little bell, bing, right? Then we'll be like, oh, okay. Good, right? It's like we want that encouragement, right? We want some sign. Just give me a sign, right? I'll stick with it. I can do that. I'll stick with it, but please give me a sign that I'm moving in the right direction. And that's why we have to have faith. That's why we have to have faith in the Buddha's enlightenment. Because if we don't have faith in the Buddha's enlightenment, we can't have faith in his teachings. If we don't have faith in the teachings, how can we have faith in practice? If we don't have faith in practice, what are we going to do in that kind of moment? Dogen says, on the whole, in the Buddha Dharma, what you first hear from a teacher or a sutra, and what you finally realize, they're the same. This is called genuine from head to tail. It's also called inconceivable cause, inconceivable effect, or Buddha cause. Buddha effect. Cause and effect in the Buddha way is neither heterogeneous, maturing, or nor homogeneous stream. Since this is so, without Buddha cause, Buddha effect cannot be conceived. Because Daolin expresses essential teaching, it was Buddha Dharma. Without Buddha cause, practice from within perceived delusion, which is where practice occurs, there cannot be Buddha effect. Insight, realization, development, stepping forward. They are mutually arising. And so a big part of what we have to wean ourselves away from, give up, is looking for a sign and just trusting. Now that can just be blind faith, right? Without our even knowing it. It's like, I'm just, you know, I know what I need to do. I'm just sticking to it, and I'm not looking up. Right? That's my faith. That's not faith. Faith is examining. Faith is awake. It's discerning. It's faith. I mean, it's trusting, but it's not dead. Right? Because otherwise, practice can just become a rule. And, you know, when I think back about my early years, there were lots of times where I was practicing that way. It was just like, I had perseverance. I knew how to persevere. And there were times where I thought, that's all I need. If I just persevere, because I trusted the Dharma is good, and so I just keep doing it, which meant whatever I was doing, that's good in and of itself, inherently, and all I have to do is just shut up and keep going. And when I look back, there were many moments where that was not true. I was wrong. The Dharma was good, but the way I was practicing in that moment was not skillful. I was not paying attention, right, to certain things that I needed. In a sense, there were signs. I was looking for other signs. There were signs, and I wasn't seeing them. They weren't on my map. And so this faith has to be alive. What we first hear from a teacher and what we finally achieve are the same. And so that faith becomes the basis of our practice, and practice becomes the basis of our verification. And then we realize from the beginning what we heard was true. I mean, you could take what you first hear from a teacher as what we first hear in beginning instruction. That as we continue and we look back or just reflect on those basic teachings of beginning instruction in Zazen, meditation instruction, right? So simple. Like chips passed around at a party, right? Anybody can say those words, right? But when we really begin to understand the Buddha Dharma, we look at those teachings and realize how profound, how they contain the whole of it. That in that very first encounter, if we had actually were able to hear and actualize those basic instructions, we would realize ourselves. And so this inconceivable cause and effect, because it's not a thing. It's not a set of instructions. It's not a set of rules. I mean, that's one of the reasons in the Zen tradition, there's this very unique and sort of extraordinary relationship with language, right? A special transmission outside the scriptures, no reliance on words and letters. And yet uses ample words and letters because of the understanding of the relationship between language and consciousness and self, and how inseparable they seem. And that when we hear things as instructions, our mind perceives that in a certain way. And yet we have to give instructions. How do I practice Zazen? But that's why there's such a caution around, or a particular relationship, I would say, around teaching, how to convey the teaching. And so because of this emphasis on direct pointing, which is really the confidence that you can realize Buddha nature, in a sense, the point is not to make it difficult. The point is to give you a direct path based in the confidence that that's your mind, that's your nature. And so it means we have to step forward, right, to be able to hear and encounter those teachings, but we experience a big gap, right? And that's why we hunger for those instructions. Okay, I'm here. Tell me what's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next step? And so there are times where it's frustrating or it can seem unnecessarily made difficult, but there is an intention behind that. You know, it's like our attachments are trying to domesticate reality, to tame it, not from the wildness of samsara, but from its wildness of being free and undefined. It has no fixed form. And so that room that I spoke about the other day, you know, where the teachings invite you into this room and we look for a place to sit, put our coffee cup, have a coffee cup, hang our hat, right? Kick off our shoes, lay down. There's nothing there. So clearly in this room, becoming comfortable means something else. We realize we're on a different kind of path here. It's not like other rooms. And so we can become comfortable with our fear, with groundlessness, with spaciousness, with timelessness, which is our nature, which is refrain from. And so Dogen says, because Juyi did not follow this, he said, even a three-year-old child can say this. He lacked the capacity for true expression. He uttered these words. He spoke his mind. And again, that's not a bad thing. You know, we shouldn't try, and Lord knows I did, to present ourselves not as we are, not where we are, but as we want to be. And this is why it's so important to study carefully and then to study more. To encounter the Dharma, right? It's sort of like, you know, we go to the spring and we drink, and then we go to our seat and we practice. And then we go to the spring and we drink, take a sip, and then we come back and practice. Right? And ultimately we realize we're swimming in water. But that our practice in that spring, the Dharma, the teachings, are intimate. And they need to be intimate within us. And so that we are examining and reflecting and gaining confidence that, am I practicing the Dharma? Yes, I think so. And everyone should be able to say that and say it with some measure of confidence. Notwithstanding those moments where, because of what you're seeing within yourself, you realize you come to the conclusion that you're not having one true thought. There's nothing within yourself you can have faith in, that everything up to this moment has been a lie. Not true. And so even in the midst of our greed, our stinginess, our fear-mongering, refrain from is the emancipation. Dogen says, even if unwholesome actions fill up worlds upon worlds, seems to be consuming the world, as though that could happen, and swallows up all things upon all things. In other words, no matter how dark it appears, no matter how much insanity there is around us, refrain from is emancipation. That never goes away, because it's not like that. That's why I think that the first noble truth, the truth of suffering, you know, for so many hundreds of years and for so many still, just existing, just living, just being in a physical form, just getting through life can be extremely dangerous, extremely terrible, right? Very fragile, very precarious. And so to liberate this body and mind from suffering, you know, in conversations these days, you know, so many people often say, what's so bad about life? Right? Why wouldn't I want to come back and do this again? Life's pretty good, right? Because we live like gods, some of us. And so I think about that first noble truth today, because we have access to images and information of what's going on for people all around the world, that to alleviate suffering is about really about so much of the suffering in the world, and how do we hold that? How do we meet that? How do we live within the time of a climate emergency? How do we do that? How are we doing that, right? It's not a what-if kind of thing. How do we do something that no one has ever done before? Not this kind of emergency. Think about that. No one's ever done that before. Buddhist practitioners they've lived through all kinds of emergencies, all kinds of terrible times. But something that was so encompassing of time and space. How do we do that? And so I think of the First Noble Truth as speaking directly to that. And so Dogen says, even at such a moment, and all the moments that will be, refrain from is emancipation. Liberation is never absent. Self-nature is never absent. And so our practice is to not despair. Right? Or when we despair, to not indulge our despair. To not be complacent. Or when we do become complacent, to not indulge our complacency. Dogen said, because Juyi has not touched upon the Buddha Win, the Buddha's teachings, do you know about a three-year-old child? He's asking him, do you know a three-year-old child? Do you understand the principle of a child's inherent capacity? Those who understand know a three-year-old child also understands all Buddhas in the three worlds. How can those who cannot understand all Buddhas in the three worlds understand a three-year-old child? Do not think that to face a person is to understand a person. Do not think that not to face a person is not to understand a person. We should study this. What is it to know a three-year-old child? We can stand before a person, face to face or in our mind, and not face them, not see them, but we just see our own projections. And that can include a person, it can include creatures, it can include the earth, it includes ourself, and not see them. And so the world that they are is hidden from us. I was hearing a story about a person who, there was a nest of crows, of little chicks, crow chicks, and one of them fell out. And it wasn't, the parents were there, but it wasn't putting it back in the nest. And so this person started feeding it and taking care of it. It sort of created a little nest on the ground and protected it, kept feeding it, until finally, for some reason, one of the parents picked it up by the scruff of the neck and put it back into the nest. And so the family decided, well, they'll just keep feeding it. Right? So they kept feeding, putting food out for the crows. And the crows would, you know, the little fledglings, the parents would pick up the food and take it to the nest and feed these little chicks. And after several days of this, the crows started bringing them gifts. So they brought a little hemlock branch. And they took an old beer can where you pull the ring off. They slipped the end of the hemlock branch through the ring and presented that as a gift, just left it there. And so they took it, as they should, receive the gift, giving and receiving. And then they brought another gift. And I've read about this, about crows doing this. You know, they pick up little shiny objects, right? They're seeing something. They don't know trash. They don't know junk. They just see something that's shiny, looks beautiful, right? Has beautiful color, right? And so they bring it as a gift. The worlds that we do not know. And not knowing them, we act out of that not knowing. We ignore, we disregard, we diminish, we kill. What is the principle of a child's inherent capacity? Dogen says, those who understand a speck of dust understand the entire world. Those who master one thing master myriad things. And this is a basic Buddhist teaching, because all things are non-dual. In a sense, we could turn and study any object of the universe. And so we study innumerable specks of dusts. We practice to master many things. Because each speck of dust appears in its own way. Each action appears in its own way, with its own characteristics. And so to really ensure our study, we study one thing and study the universe, and we do that by studying many one things, like a three-year-old child. An old master said, when you are born, you have the capacity to roar like a lion. The capacity to roar like a lion is a virtue of the Buddha turning the Dharma wheel. To clarify the true human body and to have the virtue of roaring like a lion is a great matter. Do not take it lightly. And so to understand the words and practice of a three-year-old child is a great matter of causes and conditions. What would we leave out in our study? That doesn't mean that the child doesn't have greed and anger and fear and impatience and attachment. They do. It's just simply that a three-year-old child also understands all Buddhas in the three worlds. Their lion's roar is a display of their natural power. When we practice and realize it, it becomes the power of Buddha Dharma. And then he ends. The child's expression is entrusted to you, not to the child. The old person's practice of the unattainable is entrusted to you, not to the old person. To understand, speak, and live in this way is the essential meaning of the Buddha Dharma. The child's expression, their lion's roar, is entrusted to you. It's in your hands. The old person's practice of what is unattainable, even an 80-year-old person cannot practice. The Buddha way is unattainable. I vow to attain it. The Dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. And so as we end this ongoing, go into tomorrow's Shuso Hassen, where the Shuso is kind of like that melody that's introduced at the beginning of the musical piece and then goes through all kinds of trials and tribulations and challenges, right? Most of which are not seen by the Sangha. And then they emerge, right? Shuso Hassen. Same and not the same. And so when we speak of this, taking seriously the Shuso Hassen, it's a real thing, right? I mean, to sit in that seat, you know this is a real thing, right? This is not a performance, right? We're not just acting this thing out, right? This actually matters, right? To feel entrusted with sitting on that seat and expressing the Dharma, right, is not a small thing, should not be a small thing. If we take that lightly, we don't understand what we're holding. We will get bit. And it's an ordinary thing. It's not a performance. It's being who you are. It's the chief disciple being who he is through and through. And in the same way that Juyi displays himself, the chief disciple displays himself just as I display myself. My understanding, my lack of understanding. My maturity, my immaturity. And that's the transmission of the Dharma. It's not just what happens between a teacher and a disciple at the end of their training. It's happening all the time. Right? I mean, what's the point of having a succession of teachers if the Sangha isn't enlightened or enlightening? And so the transmission is happening here and now. It is entrusted to you. You know, we tend to think, oh, it's just my practice, right? It's just my life. I'm just a little old me. But what do we think? How do we think this is going to move forward tomorrow, the next day, 10 years from now, 100 years from now? Like via what? Via whom? How are other people going to encounter this? Person to person. Eyeball to eyeball. If they're only encountering in the teachings, they're not encountering it yet. And so in that way, each of us, standing on the ground we're standing on, has been entrusted with that. It's sort of like being born, you know, and as we come out, you know, God is standing there and says, I give you this great responsibility. That doesn't happen. That isn't what happens, right? You didn't miss that. We step into it. We step into it. We step into it. And so, we are stepping into it. So, to really practice sincerely and like it matters, like your life matters. I mean, isn't that the testimony? Because my life matters to me, you matter to me. Because my life matters to me, my life matters to you. Whether you know that or not, And I don't mean in a self-important way. I mean in just we're in this together kind of way. We are this together. To care about that is to care about the whole thing. And that is a great motivation. So let's practice this all the way through. And then still more.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.